Welcome to the WCHL Community Forum, presented by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development at Durham Technical Community College. Our monthly forum features Chapel Borough's elected officials and community leaders debating topics affecting our community and you. The discussion is sponsored by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development. Chapel Hill is open to business and for business. More at opentobusiness.biz and by Durham Technical Community College, Durham and Orange County campuses. Do great things. The WCHL Community Forum begins now.
Welcome into the WCHL Community Forum here for the month of February as we are tackling another issue here in our community. I'm Blake Hodge with 97.9 The Hill. We have got Ronnie Dossey, Chair of the Chapel Hill Carrboro City Schools Board of Education, Alan Boynsey from the Chapel Hill Town Council, and Anna Richards from the Chapel Hill Carrboro NAACP in with us today talking about race relations in our community, and that is quite a broad topic and how we're dealing with a lot of issues throughout Orange County, Chapel Hill, Carrboro, but also getting into some of the specifics of those and how everything kind of interacts with each other on that. And first off, thank you everyone for joining us today and taking some time out of your schedule to be able to talk about this in this type of format where we've got some time to get into the conversation on this. And just going around the room here, I want you to just introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about how long you've been in our community and what type of role you have now taken on. And we'll start here at the left of the table with Ronnie Dossey.
Hi, thank you for having us, Blake. My name is Ronnie Dossey. I'm the chair of the Chapel Hill Carrboro City Schools Board of Education. I've been in the Chapel Hill Carrboro City community for about 12 years.
All right, and Alan, going around the table here.
Hi, good morning. My name is Alan Boynsey. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting me to be part of this forum. And I am a newly elected member of Chapel Hill Town Council. I've lived in Chapel Hill essentially since I was about 11 years old, so roughly for about 17 years. Mm-hmm. I've been in Chapel Hill.
Great. And Anna.
Good morning. And again, I'll add my thanks for having this forum on this important topic. I'm Anna Richards. I moved to the area after retiring in 2013, so coming up on 5 years. I am president of the Chapel Hill Carrboro NAACP.
Anna, let's start with you on this. Whenever we just say that phrase, race relations, what goes through your mind and where are we now? Are we heading in the right direction?
So where we are now, I think you mentioned the national stage. I think we have to include the state in that assessment. And I think, unfortunately, we are at a time that is fearful, I guess, if I had to pick a word. I think people are kind of all in their corners. And I know, as someone I mentioned, I retired here. We're not where I thought we'd be at this point. It feels like we're going in the wrong direction in terms of our overall ability to respect difference and move forward with those differences. Having said that, I am still optimistic in that there are, and I say this from our work with the NAACP, there are in this community, I think, a lot of people who want to see that change. And so there's a slither of optimism there still.
Alan, whenever you ran for town council just this past fall, I know one of the things that you talked about was representing voices that may not feel represented at a local government level. What does that background mean to you, and how do you try to incorporate that onto the local government board now that you're there?
Sure. So in my full-time work, I'm with the UNC Center for Civil Rights, and a big part of that work has been empowering and advocating for folks across North Carolina and connecting with their own local governments and connecting with their own sets of decision makers and power brokers. And so going into Chapel Hill Town Council, you know, I really brought that lens with me, that kind of sensibility. And we pride ourselves on being a progressive community. We pride ourselves on being inclusive. But there still is a lot of work that we need to do to bring those principles into reality. One of the things that I had talked about on the campaign trail was making sure that our advisory boards represented to the greatest extent possible the demographics that we have in our community, especially considering that we have a growing Latinx community, that we have a growing community of Burmese and Karen people and people of Karen and Burmese descent. If we are to kind of forge ahead, you know, as a progressive community, it's important that we hear from everyone. And it's important not just for the sake of being progressive or for the sake of, you know, having diversity, but when we think about our children and the kind of world that they're growing up in, I mean, it's an increasingly interconnected world. And so, you know, being able to relate to someone who looks different from themselves, that's a critical skill that you need to have success professionally. It's a critical skill that you need to have when you talk about self-identity, having a sense of self-worth.
And Ronnie Allen provided a nice segue there, talking about the environment that the children in this community are coming up in, and there's a lot of influence that you have on that, of course, from the school board's perspective. So kind of just piggybacking on those, what are your thoughts?
Sure. So I think what we see in schools is a reflection of what we see in our communities. And so all of the things that Anna talked about on the national level and what Alan talked about more locally plays out in the way that our students come to school and the way that our staff receives those students. And so what we've talked a lot about is how do we understand the cultural changes that we need to make to more adequately address improving education for all students. If I talk broadly on a national level, what we have heard a lot is that, you know, there is equal access to everything now. And so the when kids don't make when kids don't show educational achievement, it's lack of will, lack of effort. And we know that that's simply not true. And if we peel that back as, you know, some of the things that play into that, we see nationally that 10% of the wealthiest U.S. schools spend 10 times more than the poorest schools. And so when you look at the difference in investment in school systems and within sometimes the same school district, you can see that the things that would affect educational outcomes are not equal. And so there are a lot of things that influence educational outcomes, and culture is one of those. And so we spend a lot of time as a board and as a district talking about how we make improvements to make our culture welcoming, to make our staff reflect the diversity of our community and our students, and to really think about things like discipline and curriculum and quality teacher and the things that we know impact what our students have access to and impact their performance.
From the local government angle with the school board and town council represented, how important is it that y'all are on the same page?
So our students come to school, you know, built and supported by the community, and that's their families and the people around them. And so it's extremely important, the collaboration, and we are working on expanding communication avenues with other elected officials because we're all the same constituency, and what happens in the school plays back in the community from an economic development perspective, but also just sort of the resources there are available to the community from students and the school system generally. Bigger picture, we also work, you know, there are a lot of things schools can't influence. And so where we try to work collaboratively is around the things that affect our students in terms of housing, food security, access to health care, both mental and physical, and partnerships with the county government, partnerships with the town council, partnerships with support groups like the NAACP, really to strengthen those areas where schools don't have a direct impact, but those variables significantly influence education.
And Alan, I know that you got really jumped in there with the Weaver Dairy mobile home project that, you know, kind of is at the intersection of a lot of these things. So how has that introduction been?
I first off just want to say it's critical that we are in collaboration. I mean, there are issues that cut across the town and the schools, issues around affordable housing, issues around job opportunities, as well as racial equity. And with respect to the Lakeview community that I think you just referred to. On that night that we received public comment on the concept plan that an applicant presented for redeveloping that area, it was so great to have the over 20 folks that came out from the Lakeview community, because not just adults spoke, but also children, children who are in our school system. There was one particular individual who talked about her experience coming up through the school system, being in Chapel Hill, being around the university, and now she's at that university excelling. And that, to me, just kind of captured the intersection of our schools and of our town. I mean, our town has so much to offer, and these residents have given so much to our town. They work in our town. They pay taxes. And their children go to our schools, and you know, they enrich our schools. And so it's important to me, and as well as to other town council members, that, you know, we're creating effective avenues for them to remain in Chapel Hill. And it's something that we're still sorting through. You know, one thing that was highlighted during that meeting was the need to be in consultation, to collaborate with the community, to create options that they would be comfortable with. And that just speaks to the kind of style that we need to be operating with across governments, across communities. We need to be working together. We need to be communicating effectively. And we need to especially prioritize the folks that are affected most and what they need and want.
Anna, from that advocacy position that the organization takes on so many things, overall, do you feel like there's enough reception and then action from local government on these issues?
Well, I want to really piggyback on the last conversation, Alan's point about the Lakeview residents. And we were engaged in that process by helping them, supporting them, to represent themselves. And so meeting with them, helping them organize how they were going to show up. And 20 people spoke, but the room was packed with other residents from there. And so, you know, part of how I see our role is really around empowerment of those folks who are most affected, whether that be around housing issues or students and parents when it comes to education, working with the police. So a lot of the work we do is really collaborative work so that the folks who are most impacted have a voice in their outcome in their daily lives. So talk is cheap, right? And so I think our reputation as a forward-thinking intellectual bastion in the South, you know, the gleaming city on the hill kind of thing. I think I mentioned my optimism, and I think that comes from the willingness of folks to engage. The critical part, and I think the test, and this is something that we'll see going forward, is really on outcomes. And Chapel Hill has, you know, when you look at really the diverse number of minorities in the town, African Americans only represent about, depending on what numbers you look at, 10 to 15% of Chapel Hill. We have other minority groups in the town. And so how those interests get represented, they're different. Some of them are different depending on the group. And so I think there is a lot of work to do on that inclusiveness across ethnic groups and learning to respect those differences and still reach out and bring people in.
This is the WCHL Community Forum, 97.9 The Hill, talking about race relations here for the February WCHL Community Forum, and a lot more to get to after this.
Get ready to try something new, or maybe fulfill a lifelong dream. Sign up for continuing education courses at the Durham or Orange County campuses of Durham Tech. You can explore everything from photography to culinary arts, information technology to healthcare, EMS training to foreign language essentials. And you can take many of the courses in the evening or on the weekend. So go ahead. Visit DurhamTech.edu and click on Continuing Education. And get ready to do great things.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to the arts.
Chapel Hill is open to diversity.
To education.
To collaboration.
To transit. To foodies.
To innovation. To progress.
To the environment.
To light rail.
To craft brews.
To affordable housing.
To city parks.
To kids.
To connectivity.
To business.
To culture.
To green.
To smart growth.
Chapel Hill is open to family.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to you.
For more information, visit open2.biz.
Welcome back to the WCHL Community Forum, brought to you by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development. Chapel Hill is open to education, arts, and culture, and exploring the natural world. We're a diverse place that appreciates our past and looks forward to our future. More at opentobusiness.biz. And by Durham Tech. With many green building features, the state-of-the-art 20-acre Orange County campus of Durham Tech helps Orange County residents do great things as they pursue their education, workforce training, and lifelong learning. Now, back to the WCHL Community Forum.
97.9 The Hill, I'm Blake Hodge. We've got Ronnie Dossie, chair of the Chapel Hill Carbaryl City Schools Board of Education, Chapel Hill Town Councilmember Alan Boynsey, and Chapel Hill Carbaryl NAACP President Anna Richards, today talking about race relations here for the February WCHL Community Forum. Silent Sam on the UNC campus. This is something that has been a point of protest for decades. We haven't seen any type of action from the state or down through the university governance level. And Anna, from I've seen you at several of those protests out there as we're reporting, and and you're supporting the students there. So how big of a representation, or how kind of perfect of a representation is that of what you were just talking about of outcomes versus input?
Well, I think it's a good example. I think that the symbols of the Confederacy have served as lightning rods, as you mentioned, on our campus here at UNC for many years, and the protest continues. Students are, as we speak, organizing a petition drive, I believe, to be able to go themselves to the State Historical Society, and so they're trying to gather signatures from students and faculty on campus. The striking thing to me that occurred after the Charlottesville incident was the words from the town, from the chamber, were very impressive, very strong, very much in support of Silent Sam not representing what they saw as Chapel Hill, but yet he stands. And so the interesting dynamic in our town is that we have this town within a town, right? This state institution right in the middle of our community. And our inability to influence that, I think, is striking. And but I do think it's indicative of what we talked about earlier in terms of the state of race relations in our communities, in the state. The state government passed this law that people use as a rationale. I don't know if I agree with that as being sacrosanct, but people certainly use that law, and that was passed at the state level, and I think, you know, reflective of much of what we've seen publicly at the national level from the highest office. So it's real, it's here, and I don't know that it's going to change anytime soon.
You're talking about the 2015 law talking that prevents the moving of, quote, objects of remembrance. And, of course, the context of that was that it was passed after South Carolina pulled the Confederate flag down from their state house after Dylann Roof killed 9 people at a church. So important context to add to that part of the discussion. And, Alan, from your civil rights background in terms of your lawyer profession there, and now from the town council perspective, obviously the town has been very upfront in asking that it be removed for whatever reasons are allowing it to be removed. But from the civil rights standpoint on this, we saw the charges get dropped against those who took action and pulled down the statue in Durham. I'm not sure how any type of situation would play out here, of course, with it, with the situation being the way it is. But what are you, what's your perspective on that?
You know, one thing also about my background is that my family comes from Richmond, Virginia, which was the former seat of the Confederacy. There's a huge street, and I was actually telling some kids at an elementary school about this. There's a long street in Richmond called Miniman Avenue, and, you know, it's lined with statues that are much bigger than Silent Sam. And the irony of it is that it's a predominantly African-American city, and yet you go outside every day and you see these reminders of a time that a lot of people say is long past, but that, you know, where we're still dealing with the legacy of that time period. So in terms of my perspective as a town council member, I know that the mayor, as well as Governor Cooper back in the fall, they expressed and urged the university to take down Silent Sam and to relocate it out of the interest of public safety. And, you know, I fully support that. But also, I mean, as a civil rights lawyer, it's important to me that students on a university campus feel comfortable. It's important that students feel like they are a part of the fabric of that university. And when I hear students say that they're not comfortable, that any time they walk through that particular part of campus, you know, they feel like they're not wanted. They feel like they're hated, and that Silent Sam has a lot to do with contributing to that feeling. That's something that we need to be paying attention to. These are young people that, you know, we are going to send out into the world to be who they're going to be. And, you know, at the university, you know, it's been dubbed the University of the People. And if it's the University of the People, then we need to reflect the people's concerns. We need to be sensitive to that. And so, I mean, for me, as both a civil rights lawyer and as a town council member, the voices that really penetrate me most are those of our students, and the students I think have made themselves quite clear on this issue.
And Ronnie, you've got that same type of making students comfortable, probably the top of your priority list as a school board member, and y'all voted after that Charlottesville rally to move forward with a ban on Confederate flags on campus and symbols of oppression. What's driving a decision like that happening here?
So delivering quality instruction is affected by how students are in their environment. And part of that environment is feeling safe, feeling valued, feeling whole and a part of the fabric of the community. And so when there are things that reduce that level of safety and comfort for students, we have to respond to those. And so I tend to put less weight on symbols. But we know the weight that symbols have on our students and our communities and what it feels like to see a symbol that has had such negative impact on your family's safety, health, and wellness for generations. And so when we think about the things that affect students, those are the considerations that factor into our decisions.
Just a couple of years ago, there was a picture put on social media of some students on a field trip to Gettysburg that kind of incited a lot of that same discussion. How has the discussion changed from whenever we were having that issue in our community to maybe it being ballooned a little bit to the national level?
So I think the national tenor has changed, right? We look at what's happening at the federal level in terms of laws and rhetoric that are not in alignment to keeping all of our community members safe and included, we have to respond to that. And so I think where the big change has happened was Charlottesville, where historically what would have happened is our national leadership would have come out and had a conversation with the community, with the country, that brought us together, that talked about healing, that reminded the country that we are United States of America, that reminded the country that all of us are part of and have equal opportunities, should have equal opportunity and equal access to the resources of the country. And that didn't happen. And so I think there have to be more steps taken locally to make our community members and students feel safe and welcome and a part of the community.
Alan?
I went to East Chapel High School. I graduated back in 05. And the field trip that you mentioned, I remember, you know, as an alumnus, when I first saw that photo, I was so disturbed. You know, part of education, part of a quality education, I feel like, is also developing a sensitivity about things, especially about race, especially in a setting where a public school setting where, you know, you're around folks of different races, different incomes, different backgrounds. And I remember at the time that I saw that photo, I was so disappointed. But also, you know, I'm a big Civil War buff, Civil War history buff. I remember when I was in Richmond as a 13-year-old going into the Museum of the Confederacy, which is over by the old White House, mm-hmm. for the Confederacy. And, you know, I remember going inside expecting to get hostile stares But I didn't. Surprisingly, when I went inside, folks were very welcoming and very inviting. And that kind of leads into my next point about how there needs to be a willingness to connect with folks. You know, one thing I remember, this was during the campaign trail, but, you know, someone disagreed with my stance about Silent Sam. And I engaged with that person. We had a conversation about it, and while they didn't kind of move off their stance about being pro, you know, letting Silent Sam stand, it was important that we had that conversation, because that person ended up telling me, you know, those are great points. I never even thought about people feeling uncomfortable about it. So with those kinds of incidents that happen, it's important that we're, you know, engaging with folks that express, you know, sometimes offensive viewpoints.
This is the WCHL Community Forum, 97.9 The Hill, for the month of February, and we'll be back to continue on with this discussion, hitting a few other issues. We're talking about race relations throughout our community for the February WCHL Community Forum on 97.9 The Hill.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to the arts.
Chapel Hill is open to diversity.
To education.
To collaboration.
To transit. To foodies.
To innovation. To progress.
To the environment.
To light rail.
To craft brews.
To affordable housing,
to city parks,
to kids,
to connectivity,
to business,
to culture,
to green,
to smart growth.
Chapel Hill is open to family.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to you.
For more information, visit open2.biz.
The Orange County campus of Durham Tech is booming with 70% more course offerings. This is Penny Gluck, Executive Dean of Durham Tech's Orange County campus, here to invite you to find out why your neighbors and their kids are being educated by us in careers for the 21st century. We specialize in healthcare careers, including emergency medical management, computers, the arts, and much more. To see the full catalog, go to durhamtech.edu. I'll look forward to seeing you on campus here in Orange County.
Welcome back to the WCHL Community Forum, brought to you by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development. Chapel Hill is open to education, arts, and culture, and exploring the natural world. We're a diverse place that appreciates our past and looks forward to our future. More at opentobusiness.biz. And by Durham Tech. With many green building features, the state-of-the-art 20-acre Orange County campus of Durham Tech helps Orange County residents do great things as they pursue their education, workforce training, and lifelong learning. Now, back to the WCHL Community Forum.
97.9 The Hill, I'm Blake Hodge. Anna Richards, president of the Chapel Carbondale NAACP, Alan Boynsey from the Chapel Hill Town Council, and civil rights attorney Ronnie Dossi from Chapel Carbondale City Schools Board of Education, in with us today talking about race relations in our community and how all of these different facets intersect and drive the conversation in a lot of these things, and education being such a key foundational pillar for that. Ronnie, I want to start with you in this segment talking about some things that the school district has done over the past few years, really emphasizing restorative practices and things like that in a disciplinary standpoint. And also whenever we're talking about the types of students and in a lot of cases generally what they look like in terms of course advisement and things like that. So what is the school district doing on those types of issues?
That's a great question, Blake. And we talked earlier about this idea of strengthening the core. And it's we've started looking at it through a racial equity lens, and we found that using that lens really enables us to strengthen for all students and raise the boat for all students, if we think about a boat in the water analogy. So I'll start with one area, and there are four really critical areas, maybe five, that we really focused on to really make improvements on the core. And one is the disciplinary actions that we take as a school system. And part of that is what we know. We've also seen on a national level that blacks and children of color, students of color, are disproportionately disciplined at higher rates relative to their representation in the student population. And so we've looked at that, and we as a board have made that a priority, and we actually have asked administration to bring back an update to us every quarter so we understand what's happening in the schools. And so that's a part of it, is really what gets focused on gets worked on. And beyond that, though, principals at each school have responsibility to do analysis as well and understand what's happening with their students. And we've seen a marked improvement in the last year with the decline in the disproportionality, but also with the decline in disciplinary actions necessary overall. And so part of what's driven that is our implementation of restorative practices. And we've had teachers trained in every school. We have trainers available in all the schools to help support those efforts. And that's looked like everything from restorative circles for classroom when things happen, like the shooting in Florida. Students have had an opportunity to come together and talk about that. We've had it one-to-one. We've had it with teachers and students, and we've really seen some really great feedback. I was at a school board conference recently and was asked about it. One of the school districts said they were getting pushback because they felt like it was a fuzzy idea, and the community was concerned that it would just make incidents unreported. And, you know, I was able to share with them, we have actually seen a reduction in sort of repeat offenses. And part of that, we believe, is that when you reach people at their core, and Alan mentioned this earlier, it's like talking to people who you disagree with, right? If you don't talk to them, that doesn't make the thing go away. But if you can help them understand how you hurt me when you said that, or what that thing means when I see that and how I feel about that, sometimes that can reach a person in a deeper way. And so we've really seen good outcomes around the restorative practices implementation. I think there's also some things around curriculum. We know that we have not historically had a culturally relevant curriculum that included children of all color, that included teachers of all colors, and really working to bring that into our classroom. So what does a classroom look like where I, as a black student, can walk in and feel represented, can feel part of that fiber we talked about that connects us all and makes us feel like we can achieve in a space? And also just the rigor of the curriculum. So the one is it culturally relevant, but is it also a high level? Do we have high expectations of all of our students? And then the third piece is culture. How does a family who historically has not felt welcomed in a school feel when they just walk into the building? What does the secretary look like and sound like to them? What does the teacher look like and sound to them? What do staff members look like and sound to them? How do we welcome those families into our schools? And how do we make sure that they are part of the community? So not just coming into the schools, but being in places like our PTA groups and our SIT groups where they have the voice within the schools. And then there's pre-K investment, which is significant. So what we know, and our assistant superintendent of instruction, Rydell Harrison, says the best way to close the achievement gap is to never let it open. And part of that is investment in pre-K and really strengthening the foundation of what kids come into classrooms with, their access to vocabulary, their engagement in classroom behavior, their social and emotional skills. And so we have an amazing director, Carrie Moore, who leads that work, and we're very excited about what's happening there. The board is fully committed to that work, and we'll continue to look for other opportunities to invest more strongly in that. And then the last one is about the core, so things that aren't necessarily school-based things, but things that might create barriers to our students. And those are things we talked a little bit more about, collaboration. So one of those is mental health. And what we're doing there is we have hired a resource, a district-wide resource, a system of care director who will help us look at where there are pockets of need within the district and manage those opportunities. We're also working with the county. They're right now conducting a needs assessment throughout the county and how people access mental health resources. And so we'll collaborate with them in that space. The other thing we're doing there is we have a local RFP out, a request for proposal on mental health co-location in three of our elementary schools. And so we know that, you know, as we think about a whole child and the things that get in the way of instruction, that's one way that we can help. And so teacher training is another way. When we talk about the core things, strengthening the core, making sure teachers have time to prepare for their classes, making sure they have the appropriate training that they need. We are very, very lucky in this community to have strong teachers in a lot of places. And we know that teachers are the number one influencer of educational outcomes for students in schools. And so really making sure the teachers have the appropriate support that they need. And then lastly, our facilities. So thinking about how facilities influence the learning and what types of spaces we've had. Teachers doing things creatively around flexible seating in a classroom and what that looks like for students and how they learn differently. And so really trying to be thoughtful about all of those really foundational things that influence learning and have an impact on outcomes, you know, how students come into the classroom and how they leave the classroom.
Alan, I wanted to talk with you about our policing practices. And one thing that Frank Baumgartner at UNC has been doing a lot of over the past few years is giving presentations to local government bodies about their police forces and just the raw numbers that are there in terms of you're stopping these people, and then this certain segment of those stops is seeing an unbelievable amount of searches. So from your civil rights background and now the town council perspective overseeing kind of the police force, what's been your learning process there?
So one thing that I've been encouraged by are the quarterly reports that are now issued by the police department with respect to information on charges, arrests, and breaks that information down by race. And the most recent police department quarterly report indicated about 18 of 24 charged related to the marijuana were African Americans, which means about 75% of those charged were African Americans. You know, we do have ongoing issues with race and with, in particular, the overrepresentation of African Americans in our criminal justice system. You know, one thing too about the police department is I know that they're committed to constantly reexamining their own practices and making sure to pay attention to the Orange County Bias Free Policing Coalition recommendations, which had indicated that, you know, when it comes to marijuana use, you know, really statistically, there's really no difference between usage rates among whites and blacks. Mm-hmm. So I'm encouraged by the quarterly reports, but as that particular figure indicates, we still have a lot of work to do in terms of making sure that policing is happening in a fair manner. And, you know, one thing that Ronnie had mentioned earlier about SROs, I believe this most recent report indicated that there weren't any petitions or charges filed by SROs in this last quarter, which is very encouraging.
Mm-hmm. Anna, you wanted to jump
in? Yeah, I was just going to interject. So the community policing effort that came really out of the Baumgartner report that you mentioned, there is still, I think there have been a number of changes. My understanding is some of the procedures have been actually changed by the police department. I serve on the Justice in Action Committee for the town, the advisory board there, and we work with the police, and one of our requests has been, if you've done things because of those reports, how is that being communicated to the community? And we found that it hasn't. And so I think there will be an effort coming out this spring to share, okay, we got this data, and here's what we did with it, and here's the processes that we changed, and here are the outcomes. And so not all the outcomes, as Alan mentioned, are going to show the kind of ratio that we would think would be normal. If everyone was getting stopped at the same rate, then you'd expect there to actually be maybe in the reverse based on the percentage of people who are white and who are people of color in our community. But so one, I think we are fortunate to have a police department that is open to dialogue and is open to hearing the community. I again challenge outcomes and also communication when we do make a change. So the other thing is that perceptions, and I think because of past activity, that sometimes you have to work extra hard at communication, right, to demonstrate that there has been a change. And so we're going to be working with in collaboration with the police department and two of our members of our leadership that Alan mentioned, James Williams and Ty Hunter, are part of that community policing board, and working to make sure that the things that were brought out are addressed in that as we go forward.
One thing that's seemed to be growing in prominence, I guess I should say, is the racial equity training that has been put on, and a lot of these sessions happening locally and a lot of elected officials mm-hmm. going through those trainings. What's your reaction to that?
Well, I think it's absolutely essential. I know that, speaking of the police, I know that Chief Blue and his direct reports, and I don't know how many of his staff, have gone through racial equity training, the two-day training. I know that not all of our elected officials have gone through the training. I know that many of our teachers have not gone through the training. And I think it gives a perspective, a historical perspective, that is helpful, you know, to understand kind of how we got here. And I really, really think it's essential.
Are there ways from the elected official perspective on this to incorporate more of that, whether it be through that seminar or just, you know, the training that people are receiving, onboarding to staff or, you know, teachers, of course, as well?
Yeah. Sure. So this is Ronnie. I totally agree with Anna that it's a critical training. I remember going and at first I was sort of resistant. I feel like my life experience has been such that I could teach the class. But what I found helpful was really it's a very sort of data-rich experience that gives context to where we are today. And so I found value even having lived it. And I would imagine that folks who haven't had similar experiences to me as a black person growing up in America would really find it very valuable if they're open to learning about that. We do in the district provide similar types of training. We have our teacher professional development project advance. There are segments of training included around equity, around implicit bias, and other areas where we focus on making sure that all teachers and staff have access to that kind of training.
Alan?
So I know that our town staff, they I think are generally required to go through some kind of racial equity training. I know our town manager, Roger Stansel, has gone through it. Mm-hmm. But that raises a great point as to what that training looks like, say, from department to department, you know, from police department to, you know, say, planning. That's something that I would like to take a look into. I myself have done a bit of training, although I haven't done the whole thing. I've done the groundwater and managed to get my fiance to also be willing to go through that and also the full training. And as Ronnie had mentioned before, when I went in there, you know, I thought, hey, you know, I'm African American, you know, I've lived it, I've gone through it, I know what it's like. But like you said, it's a data-driven training, and I did not know the level to which institutional racism has operated. So
how intentional it was mm-hmm. was
oh,
I always not. Naively mm-hmm. imagined it kind of happened. And mm-hmm. so when you look at the data points, it's you can see how intentional mm-hmm. it is. It was developed and how intentional it is in continuing mm-hmm. it. Mm-hmm.
This is the WCHL Community Forum here on 97.9 The Hill. And I feel like we could have a couple of more hours of this discussion, but we'll have to wrap up here momentarily. So we'll take a break, come back, and finish out the WCHL Community Forum on 97.9 The Hill for the month of February, talking race relations in our community. I'm Blake Hodge.
Get ready to try something new or maybe fulfill a lifelong dream. Sign up for continuing education courses at the Durham or Orange County campuses of Durham Tech. You can explore everything from photography to culinary arts, information technology to healthcare, EMS training to foreign language essentials, and you can take many of the courses in the evening or on the weekend. So go ahead, visit durhamtech.edu and click on continuing education, and get ready to do great things.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to the arts.
Chapel Hill is open to diversity.
To education.
To collaboration.
To transit. To foodies.
To innovation. To progress.
To the environment.
To light rail.
To craft brews.
To affordable housing.
To city parks.
To kids.
To connectivity.
To business.
To culture.
To green.
To smart growth.
Chapel Hill is open to family.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to you.
For more information, visit open2.biz.
Welcome back to the WCHL Community Forum, brought to you by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development. Chapel Hill is open to education, arts, and culture, and exploring the natural world. We're a diverse place that appreciates our past and looks forward to our future. More at opentobusiness.biz. And by Durham Tech. With many green building features, the state-of-the-art 20-acre Orange County campus of Durham Tech helps Orange County residents do great things as they pursue their education, workforce training, and lifelong learning. Now, back to the WCHL Community Forum.
Talking about race relations in our community here for the month of February, and we've got Ronnie Dossi, Chair of the Chapel Hill Carborough City School Board of Education, Alan Boynsey from the Chapel Hill Town Council, Anna Richards, President of the Chapel Hill Carborough NAACP. In the little time that we have left, we'll start with Ronnie and just go around the room. What can our community be doing to improve?
That's a good question. One of the reasons that I ran for the school board was because I noticed that there were some things that could be done to improve outcomes for all students. And I think when we get outside of our personal lenses and really consider how connected we are as a community and really consider that your child's education or well-being is as important as my child, then that changes everything. And so having people really think through that lens. For example, when we talk about, you know, children going to non-public schools and what that means for children who are left behind, right? So you're not just considering your child, which is a normal, very normal thing to do, but thinking about what happens to those children left behind. So I wonder how we broaden our consideration of what good community means and what individual roles are in that development of that community. I will say from an educational perspective, continuing to support the schools in a very public way. I'm excited about the conversations I hear about public education and the good things we are doing and will continue to do. We certainly have a lot of work left to do, but I think we're headed in a good direction. And so, Chapel Hill Carborough talks a lot about being progressive. Sometimes it gets uncomfortable when it comes time to doing it. I think we are, under the direction of Dr. Baldwin, our superintendent, are going to be doing a lot of really difficult change work in the next years. And we are going to be asking for some community support around that. And some of that might feel uncomfortable. It might feel like it's, not directly for everybody. And those are the ways in which we show as a community that we are our words, that we value progress and that we value all people. And I think understanding the longer term vision will be important. And that's what we have to bring, but we have to have community support behind it.
Alan?
So one thing that we can do going forward is purposefully, purposefully making sure that our advisory boards represent to a greater degree the demographics of our community. And it's a hard thing to do. the way that advisory boards, and this is not unique to Chapel Hill, but this is across North Carolina, the way typically that vacancies are filled are through networking. It's, you know, people on a given board recommending people on for those vacancies that they know, friends of theirs, neighbors, colleagues. I would like for us to step outside of that and, you know, think more about, you know, what perspective is missing from this board, and who do I know or who could I connect with? Who knows? Someone who could bring that kind of perspective. And this is more general. This goes beyond any kind of policy, but stepping outside our comfort zones. For me, you know, that means, you know, going to a church, going to a predominantly black church, going to a predominantly white church, going to spaces where, you know, they're typically racially homogenous, and walking in that space, being in that space, and being in that space as often as you can manage. Because as I said before, it's important that we're connecting with each other. It's important that we're having conversations with one another. And those kinds of connections can't happen if we're not in each other's spaces.
Anna?
So I think institutions and people, because people are institutions, right? That we have to be more intentional in our actions. So if we're hiring someone, is the pool diverse? You want to hire the best person, you want to hire the strength for whatever you're doing, but if you don't have a diverse pool to start out with, the outcome's going to be predestined, right? So intentionally reaching out to those places where we might be able to bring in well-qualified people who make the panel diverse. If we're hosting an event, are our committees reflective of the whole community, and reaching out to those folks who can help us bring in other segments of our community? So I think the intentionality of what we do will have an impact on the outcomes.
Anna Richards is president of the Chapel Hill Carborough NAACP, Alan Boynsey, civil rights lawyer who was also on the Chapel Hill Town Council, and Ronnie Dossey from the Chapel Hill Carborough City Schools Board of Education. Thank you all so much for joining us on the February edition of the WCHL Community Forum on 97.9 The Hill. I'm Blake Hodge.
This month's WCHL Community Forum was presented by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development. Its mission is to support opportunities to put Chapel Hill's people to work and create economic prosperity for all, now and in the future. More at opentobusiness.biz. And by Durham Tech. $500 scholarships are now available at Durham Tech for any Chapel Hill, Carborough, or Orange County High School resident who graduated from their local high school in the past year. So go to durhamtech.edu and type Connect Funds into the search box and get ready to do great things.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to the arts.
Chapel Hill is open to diversity.
To education.
To collaboration. To transit. To foodies.
To innovation. To progress.
To the environment.
To light rail.
To craft brews.
To affordable housing.
To city parks.
To kids.
To connectivity.
To business.
To culture.
To green.
To smart growth.
Chapel Hill is open to family.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to you.
For more information, visit opentoo.biz.
The Orange County campus of Durham Tech is booming with 70% more course offerings. This is Penny Gluck, Executive Dean of Durham Tech's Orange County campus, here to invite you to find out why your neighbors and their kids are being educated by us in careers for the 21st century. We specialize in healthcare careers, including emergency medical management, computers, the arts, and much more. To see the full catalog, go to durhamtech.edu. I look forward to seeing you on campus here in Orange County.